A Republic production. Republic Pictures presents John Wayne, John Carroll, and Anna Lee in Flying Tigers. With Paul Kelly, Gordon Jones, Mae Clark, Addison Richards, Edmund MacDonald, Bill Shirley, and Tom Neal. The characters and events depicted in this motion picture are fictitious. Any similarity to actual persons, living or dead, is purely coincidental. Music score by Victor Young. Associate producer, Edmund Granger. Directed by David Miller. A photograph of a Chinese man. Then Chinese characters which transform into English writing. Since the flying tigers first spread their wings in the skies above China, the enemies learned to fear the intrepid spirit they've displayed in face of his superior numbers. They've become the symbol of the invincible strength of the forces now upholding the cause of justice and humanity. The Chinese people will preserve forever the memory of their glorious achievements. Generalissimo Chiang Kai-shek.
Attention! Flight A! Japanese aircraft sighted over Kuching area. Japanese aircraft sighted over Kuching area.
On an airfield, the propellers of planes whir into action, and men run towards them. Each of the planes have sharp teeth and an eye painted on the noses. Two planes speed across the grassy airstrip and take off in a cloud of smoke. They soar off into the sky, each one bearing a number on its tail. One is number 70, another 76. Two Chinese women watch them taking off. Plane numbers 77 and 78 are next up in the sky. The pilot of one of the planes, Captain Jim Gordon, picks up his radio.
Maggie Blue from Maggie Blue 1, go ahead.
Blue 2, okay, skipper.
Blue 3, check.
Blue 4, receiving you, R5S5, sir.
Blue 5, okay. Blue 6, okay.
A little boy stands by a crate labeled United China Relief, spooning rice into his mouth with chopsticks. Nearby, a woman's busy doling out food to a whole line of children. She fills dishes with rice from a huge pot. Then the children take a piece of bread and head off to eat their rations. As the locals eat hungrily, a sound overhead makes them look up. The shadows of three fighter planes cross the ground below. In one of the planes, a Japanese bomb aimer looks through his bomb sight, then pulls the trigger, releasing a bomb. Down below, the locals start to run for cover. They hurry into a large shelter and close the doors just before a bomb lands nearby on a supply truck. Explosions rain down all around, creating clouds of smoke. A toddler cries, alone amongst the wreckage. Up in the sky, the Japanese fighter planes continue on in formation. Explosions pepper the fields and buildings below. A Japanese fighter pilot watches grimly. Elsewhere in the sky, Captain Jim Gordon and his team of planes are flying through clouds. He spies the Japanese aircraft up ahead.
18 Mitzi attack bombers, 3 points to your right, altitude about 15,000.
Well, what do you know? Only 3-1. That won't even wake me up.
Gordon to Dale, over.
Go ahead, sir.
Listen, Dale, this is your first time up. Don't try to win this war all by yourself. Stick close to element formation.
Yes, sir.
Ding Hao.
Ding Hao.
Jim gives his men the thumbs up through the cockpit windscreen. Veering off, the Flying Tigers head off in formation. A pilot in one of the Japanese fighter planes spots them. The Tigers are in a steep dive. Each of the pilots stares steadfastly ahead, concentrating on the task in hand. As they dive in amongst the Japanese aircraft, a battle ensues. A Japanese rear gunner aims his weapon at the Tigers. Jim presses a button. His machine guns kill off the gunner. More machine gun fire hits one of the Japanese pilots, and his plane plummets out of the sky. The skies are filled with planes. Spying Jim's plane up ahead, a Japanese pilot fires at it, piercing the bodywork with a line of holes. Gritting his teeth, Jim pulls his plane out of trouble. One of Jim's men spies another Japanese fighter and fires, hitting a pilot in the face. Another of Jim's men chews gum ferociously as he continues to fire, turning one of the Japanese fighters into a ball of flames. Grim-faced, Dale begins to fire his guns. The Japanese pilot in the plane ahead of him turns to look out of his cockpit. A second fighter behind Dale fires at him, wounding him. Dale flops forward in his seat, then falls back again, looking petrified. Jim sees that he's in trouble and quickly steers his plane towards him, aiming his guns at the Japanese fighter. The Japanese pilot tries to steer his way out of danger, but Jim's on his tail, and soon his plane is engulfed in thick black smoke. He tries desperately to see out of his cockpit, but a final round of fire from Jim, and he clutches his chest, blood spewing out of his mouth. Then he slumps forward. His plane careers into the ground. Jim looks up at his number one, Hap, who gives him a thumbs up. Chinese locals work the ground in the fields around the airfield. One of the Flying Tiger planes sits motionless. Inside the medical hut, a nurse and a Chinese doctor attending to a man who's smoking a cigarette.
What time is it?
11:27.
Looks like your booze are overdue.
The nurse, Brooke, quickly hurries over to the window, pulls up the blind and peers up into the sky. All around the airfield, people look up, awaiting the return of the planes. They fly back in pairs. Brooke's face breaks into a smile as she watches them. And two local women beam up into the sky as well. Brooke lowers the blind again, and then heads back over to her patient.
All safe and accounted for?
Of course.
Of course.
Plane number 70 heads back to the airfield, coming in smoothly to land. Another plane is hot on its tail. As the wheels of number 76 touch down on the ground, the two local women smile delightedly. People rush over to greet the returning aircraft. Two men grab hold of a wing, helping to turn one plane round as it stops. Slowly, the propellers come to a stop, and Jim climbs out of the cockpit.
Look, Captain Jim! Looky! Wham, wham!
Termites.
A team of locals set about pushing his plane off the airfield. They turn it round so it's facing in the opposite direction. A small, open-topped military vehicle skims under one of its wings and then screeches to a halt.
Better get a new oxygen tank. She only registers 500.
Hap comes over to join Jim.
You got something on your mind?
Me? Nothing but Japs. Why?
You're not pulling out of your dives fast enough.
Oh? Well, watch it.
Only takes one.
I know, Jim.
Hate to look around one day and find out you were the little man who wasn't there. You and Reardon better go up this afternoon and simulate dive and attack. Mustn't get rusty.
Okay, Jim.
A little rough in spots, Dale, but I think when you iron a few things... Dale!
Dale's unconscious in his cockpit.
Dale.
His head lolls forward, lifeless. Shell-shocked, Jim climbs down from the wing of Dale's plane.
Bill, take care of Dale.
Jim marches off across the airfield.
Mike?
Yes, sir?
Did that box of instruments come up from Rangoon?
Yes, sir.
Fix a panel in Dale's ship.
The men, who are all resting, turn to look at Jim, who walks away. Brooke places a watch amongst a pile of personal effects and bundles them up into a white cloth.
This belongs to Dale, too.
She places it in the white bundle, then continues tying it up. She takes the bundle over to Jim's office.
Come in.
Jim looks up sadly as Brooke crosses the room and lays Dale's things on the desk in front of him. Jim opens a drawer and puts the bundle inside to join the many other bundles already there.
Quite a collection.
He shuts the drawer.
Should have stayed in college where he came from. He begged for a chance. Begged for it like some kid asking to go to the circus. And I gave it to him.
What happened?
He didn't watch his tail. And outnumbered as usual.
He did bring his ship back?
Yeah. He did. But tomorrow or the next day, there'll be somebody else in it. With three of them on his tail. Or six or ten.
Jim.
How's Miller?
Just a flesh wound in the shoulder. I'll get him back to you in a week.
How are you?
You can have me back any time.
He stands up and kisses her.
Why don't you go home?
You need a nurse. Suppose you cut yourself shaving.
When did you sleep last?
Monday. It was a very good day for it.
Well, try Thursdays. They're good days, too. Excuse me. Larry, get me the weather on M5. Check on those oil drums. Find out what's holding them up. As if I didn't already know. Think Hap could run this show for a couple of days?
Yes, why?
I've got to run down to Rangoon. The colonel promised me some replacements. I'm going to need them now that Dale's...
When will you be back?
Oh, I don't know. I'd keep right on going till I get to San Francisco.
Nice town, San Francisco.
Yeah. There's a place on Fisherman's Wharf. They serve oysters you have to cut with a knife.
Ever try Simpson's in London? Roast beef you can cut with a fork.
No floor show, though.
No floor show. Take me with you.
No, Brooke, we can't do anything like that.
I know. I couldn't leave anyway. There's a new batch of evacuee children coming into the shelter this afternoon.
Want to see me, Jim?
Yeah, I want you to take care of the store while I'm away. Gotta go to Rangoon.
Sure.
Larry, have the station wagon brought around. Put my things in it. Gotta catch a plane for Rangoon. Did that gasoline shipment arrive yet? Somebody'd figure out a ship that'd fly on rice.
Want to check the scoreboard?
McCurdy will fly number two while you're in charge. And make sure that second string pitcher does some work on his guns.
Jim, zero. Hap, zero. Dale, two. I thought you and Jim...
Didn't I tell you to credit my ship only to Dale?
Well, look, Jim, I got nobody back in the States. I thought Dale's folks would find that $1,000 bonus pretty handy around the farm. Or is it a gas station?
You got your halo on crooked, pal.
Car's ready.
Right. I start working Selby and McIntosh as a team. I think they're about ready.
Okay, Jim, now don't worry about a thing. I'll try and take care of things while you're away.
Okay. And no gin rummy with Brooke. She's my pigeon. Bye, Pidgey.
He kisses her, then heads outside and climbs into the driver's seat of a truck. Brooke waves to him as he leaves, then Hap looks at her.
What do you see in that guy?
San Francisco.
Huh?
Never mind.
It's pouring with rain outside the Hotel Continental in Rangoon. Jim strides through the busy foyer up to the reception desk.
Any more on Flight 8 from Hong Kong?
The airport informs me the plane has been delayed. The storm, you know.
Oh. Well, there are two gentlemen here expecting me.
I believe they just came in. You'll find them in the cocktail lounge with Mrs. Bales.
Mrs. Bales? Well, if anything more comes in on that plane, let me know.
Yes, sir.
Jim heads into the cocktail lounge, then heads towards a table, taking off his hat.
Squadron Leader Gordon, I'm Lieutenant Bart.
How are you? Hello, Blackie.
Hello, Jim. My wife, Jim.
How do you do? What are you doing here, Blackie?
Well, I heard you needed pilots out here, and I needed the job. I didn't know at the time that you were head man.
Barton downs his drink and gets up.
I think I'll run upstairs and pack. Excuse me.
Train leaves for Lycio at 6 in the morning. Be on it.
Yes. She knows, Jim.
I hate to turn you down, Blackie, but I've got to.
Look, Jim, I don't want to put this on a personal basis, but you know me. You know my work. I'm a good flyer, Jim.
I know you are. You could work for me anytime. We'd get along, but...
Oh, I haven't been on that stuff for a long time, Jim. Honest. That's just soda pop, that's all.
Oh, it isn't that. I'm trying to hold on to a fine bunch of men, and it isn't always easy to keep peace in the family. Some of them would remember that Lefty Matson case.
Jim, I was cleared of that.
I know. The Army gave you a clean bill of health, but you'd be flying with a lot of men that knew Lefty. I'm really doing Blackie a favor, Mrs. Bales.
I don't want any favors, Jim. I just want a chance to get back on my feet again. This is the last outpost for me, Jim.
Oh, it just wouldn't work out. I'm sorry. Goodbye, Miss Vale. Blackie.
Jim strides off through the cocktail lounge and back into the crowded foyer. He goes back over to the desk.
Any news yet?
No, sir, not yet.
Oh, Mr. Gordon, I made some excuse so that I could talk to you. No matter what happens, please don't ever tell Blackie that I did.
Oh, of course.
He leads Mrs. Bales to a quiet corner.
Mr. Gordon, I hate to butt in like this, but you've got to give him another chance to fly. You've got to.
Mrs. Bales, I can't jeopardize the morale of an entire squadron just to give your husband a job.
Oh, but it isn't just a job. Though heavens knows we need the money. It's something more. I married him right after that... Well, after that happened. He told me the whole story. I thought I could make it up to him. But I can't. There's some things that even a wife can't do for the man she loves. He's got to find it himself. Doing the things he loves best, even if it means paying with his life.
Oh, it isn't easy for me to say no. You don't know what you're asking me to do.
Oh, I do. Do you know what losing your self-respect means? Well, that's what's happened to him. I know. I live with him. I've caught him looking out of a window watching a plane. Watching it till he couldn't see it anymore. Afraid to turn around and look me in the face.
Oh, Mrs. Bales.
Mr. Gordon, you know men. You command a squadron. You've seen them die. Some of them go out smiling. Have you ever seen the look on a man's face when you tell him he can't fly anymore?
No.
It's a living death, Mr. Gordon. I know.
Please don't say any more.
I'd rather he went with you and took what came than to live with him the rest of his life, watching him die a little every day.
She looks down, tearfully.
Have him on that train tomorrow morning.
Thanks.
You can't go with him, you know.
Yes, I know. And please don't ever tell Blackie I spoke to you.
I just received news of that plane from Hong Kong, sir. It was attacked and fired on by a Japanese fighter squadron.
Is it down?
No, sir. It's coming in on one wing and a prayer.
Get me a cab.
Yes, sir.
Jim touches Mrs. Bales' hand comfortingly, then heads off. A plane flying through the darkness, one wing on fire. The two pilots are struggling to keep it under control. In the back, the passengers are being jostled around as the plane lurches.
Rangoon calling again, Woody.
Jason, flight aid, go ahead, Rangoon. What do you want now? Am I going to bring the plane in? No, you dope. I'm going to park it up here in a cloud, spit the power out, wait till the storm blows over.
We've done everything to cover your landing, Jason. Fire and crash trucks are standing by. Bring her down easy.
Easy?
The flames from the wing trail through the night sky.
Rangoon calling Jason, flight 8. What's your position?
My instruments tell me I'm flying upside down, 5,000 feet below Lake Michigan. But I must be wrong because I can see the lights of the field. Head for cover, I'm coming in.
I can't see him, Mr. Rupkin. Bring that mic outside.
They all hurry outside and stare up into the black sky. The microphone's plugged into an outdoor socket.
Lower the landing gear, Alabama.
Only one wheel lowers beneath the flaming wing. The plane starts to lurch downwards.
If he walks away from this one, he's a miracle man.
As the flaming aircraft draws closer, Jim grabs the microphone.
Hold on, Woody, you're coming in on one wheel.
The plane skims over the top of them, then veers up into the sky again.
Thanks. Woody, this is Jim Gordon.
Jim, what are you doing up so late, Pappy?
Never mind that. Listen to me. The runway at the north end of the field is mud and water. Your only chance is to get that wheel up and skid in on your belly. Well, watch the wind.
Stop worrying, Pappy. Just get that mob out of the way or somebody will get a hot engine in their lap. Pull up that landing gear.
Alabama does as he's told, and the wheel pulls back up into the flaming wing. As the plane veers downwards again, Jim looks at the windsock.
You're gonna spill, Woody. You're coming in across wind.
The plane lands with a splash on its belly and skids through the water. Immediately, everybody runs to its aid. A truck pulls up alongside it. Then the door is opened and the passengers are quickly helped out. Men work to try and put out the flames in the engine. Woody and Alabama are the last to leave the flaming craft.
Good old real estate. Jim!
Woody!
What do you say, Pappy?
Nice landing.
Did you like it?
Why, you lucky?
What do you mean, lucky?
Coming in crosswind.
Why not? I wanted the wind to blow the fire away from the cabin, not into it, see? We've my better half while he's still awake. This is Alabama Smith. This is Captain Jim Gordon, the Flying Tiger.
How are you?
That's enough.
Jason, that was magnificent. Magnificent.
Save it.
I'm going to find a promotion for you, Jason.
Listen, mister, you can take my job, the Rangoon Airways, the Burmese, the Singhalese, and the rest of this cockeyed country and give it back to Marco Polo. Chop, chop.
But, Mr. Jason...
I didn't sign on to be a target for a bunch of four-eyed Japs.
You're not resigning, Mr. Jason.
No, I'm quitting, definitely, and for good. And me, too.
Oh, and forward Mr. Jason's mail to Kootsing Airfield. Thank you very much, Mr. Repke.
Here come the replacements.
A car speeds up to the airfield. And as it screeches to a halt... men stand to attention. Woody and Jim step out, both dressed in light-colored jackets and hats.
Take these men over to the barracks.
What's this thing?
Headquarters.
Looks like the Taj Mahal was a hangover. What's that, the milk bar?
Hello, Alan.
To all the barracks. Pick out a cot with four legs if you can find one. Dump your stuff and report back to me at the hangar.
What hangar?
Jim points to some trees.
That's a hangar? Oh, I like the green roof, but isn't it a little drafty?
I didn't promise you LaGuardia Airport.
Look, Pappy, if I'd have known this, I wouldn't have come out here for $612 a month. Say, how did you get mixed up in this anyway? You never used to like chop suey.
You'll find out. Get yourself all set, and I'll see you later.
Okay, Pappy.
Say, what are those things you fellas wear in your bags? Laundry tickets?
No. That's in case you're forced down in Chinese territory, they'll know you're an American volunteer.
What if you're forced down enemy territory?
Then you've got nothing to worry about.
He strides over to Woody.
You all set, Woody?
Well, the red carpet's a little threadbare, the brass band's a little out of tune, but outside of that, I'm all set.
Would you like the blue or the pink bridal suite, sir? The blue comes with a sunken tub.
What did you expect, the LaGuardia Airport?
Huh?
Woody spots a pair of hands hanging up some stockings to dry.
Drop this off for me, will you? I gotta make a reconnaissance. I'm getting that old feeling.
Woody peers into the window of a wood cabin. Then he opens the door and steps inside.
Jim!
Woody tries a door.
I'm just finishing a bath. Be right out. How is Rangoon? Did you have fun? How many replacements did you bring back?
Woody sits down with a smile.
You would come back just when I was stealing a bath. Then, of course, the boiler would burst and the water ran out. Oh, hello. Jim Gordon with you?
What I do?
Say, tell me something. You always use Jim's tub?
Yes. We all do.
Cozy.
It happens to be the only bathtub in Kootsing.
I see. Must be a very chummy spot on Saturday night.
Do you sing and dance too, or is your act limited to patter?
Oh, fine.
You're one of the new replacements, aren't you?
Oh, no, not one of the replacements. Jim told me he was having a little trouble out here, so I thought I'd come out and give him a hand. And, I think I'm going to like it.
I'm so glad. If there's anything we can do to make you comfortable, don't hesitate to call on us, will you?
Oh, I will. How about dinner?
Sorry. I never get quite that hungry.
Brooke strides over to the door.
Oh, and if you should use the tub, you'll be sure and empty it, won't you? We've no plumbing. So sorry.
She walks off. And Woody puts his hat back on and takes out a cigarette.
What happened to that one?
I overshot the field yesterday. Came in a little too high, I guess.
I'll watch it.
Jim!
Brooke!
Been behaving yourself?
Mm-hmm. No, she hasn't. She's been taking me a gin rummy ever since you left.
Oh, Woody. Miss Elliot, Mr. Jason.
We've met.
Oh.
Well, what do you think of Glamour Boy?
He's a difficult man to get to know. So shy.
Oh, anybody in my spot would have done the same thing.
Hap Davis, Woody Jason.
Glad to have you with us, Jason.
Thank you, Hap.
I'm going to put him in your hands, Hap.
I don't need a nurse. I've already got one.
If you'll excuse me, I have to go on duty.
Aren't you going
to
wish me luck?
You don't really need it, do you?
Did I do something wrong?
You ever do anything right?
Oh, Pappy, why don't you stop picking on me?
Come on, I'll introduce you to the rest of the fellas.
I don't like to point, chum, but she happens to be the skipper's girl.
Great. She's got a sense of humor, hasn't she?
We all have. In fact, we wake up two or three times a night, laugh, and go back to sleep.
And I sure would have hated to have been on that burning plane with anybody else but Woody.
You don't have to sell Jason to us. We know he's got a good record. But out here, everybody starts eating.
Oh, yeah.
That go for me, too? Sure it does.
Thanks, fellas.
Thanks. Selby?
Yeah?
I got your 30 pasted together.
Okay.
We're not sticklers for discipline out here, Woody, but we expect results. Relax. Gentlemen, this is Woody Jason.
Hi, fellas.
You say? Hi, Woody.
His bark is worse than his bite. Shake hands and count your fingers.
Hey, I'm McCurdy from Brooklyn.
Hiya, Brooklyn.
You ever know a little girl by the name of Sally Gray?
No, you wouldn't. You're not a type.
My name's Norton. I'm from...
Don't tell me. I know. State of beautiful women. You ever know the MacDot sisters from Fort Worth?
I'm from Dallas.
Oh.
Reared in Maine. And I don't think you'd know anybody I'd know.
Well, now, there's where you're wrong. I knew a little red-headed girl by the name of...
Selby, Michigan.
Selby, Michigan. Hello, Michigan. What a football team. I used to date a little, what do you call those?
Majorette.
Yeah, a majorette. What a football team.
My name's McIntosh.
Hiya, Mac.
I come from nowhere. You got a girl there?
Hey, Bentley's that gal's name. A tall brunette with a P-40 figure and plenty of armor. Boy, I can't wait till I get back.
Back?
Yeah, you don't think I'm going to make this my life's work, do you?
The men exchange uneasy glances.
Give him time, boys. He'll catch there's a war on.
I know there's a war, but you fellas have no part of it. We're all out here for the same reason. Go.
Sure, that we are, but it's good to know that every check you cash in means a Jap's cashed in, too.
Wait a minute, fellas. We're all making the same salary. $600 a month and $500 a Jap, right?
Now, back home, most of us would kill rattlesnakes, whether there's a bounty on them or not.
I know, but you're protecting your own home. This is not our home. It's not our fight. It's a business. And boy, I hope business is good.
Max stops Reardon from saying anything. So Reardon gets up and walks out.
What's the matter with him?
His brother crashed behind enemy lines. We found him after the Japs got through with him.
Well, I didn't mean anything personal by anything.
Oh, we know you didn't, Woody. Come on, let's take a walk.
Yes, but...
Get out!
Everybody runs for cover as bombs start raining down on the airfield. Three planes are flying overhead, dropping bombs onto the ground below. The barracks reverberate from the explosions. Jim gets up.
Hands up!
Everybody runs outside. The men all race to their planes and climb in.
Is anybody hurt?
Not yet.
Which one do I take?
Are you crazy? When do you get some combat training?
Training me? I'm losing dough.
And I'm running this outfit. Get back.
Jim climbs into his plane while Brooke helps Woody away. Jim and Hap pull down their goggles and give each other the thumbs up. Then their planes start to rumble across the grass. Picking up speed, the two planes take off into the air. Woody watches them from the ground. Then more planes take off after them.
1,500 smackers up there, and that guy cuts me up.
The shelter of the first aid.
Well, what are we waiting for? I don't know, but I came out here to fly.
He spots an empty plane and runs over to it.
Hey, Woody! That ain't the way!
Woody climbs into the cockpit and starts the engine.
Stop! Stop!
A mechanic runs after the plane.
No! No! Come back here!
But Woody's taken off.
Smart bullet, take your bling! No bullets!
No ammunition!
What? No,
contact him by radio!
Him not take your phone!
Whoa. Let's contact Jim!
Yeah!
The Japanese pilots spot the flying tigers. As the three Japanese planes head into the clouds, Woody sends his plane soaring upwards.
Aggie Dispersal calling Aggie Blue One Gordon. Aggie Dispersal calling Aggie Blue One Gordon. Go ahead.
Aggie Blue One Gordon, back to Aggie Dispersal. Go ahead.
Hello, Gordon. Wingman Jason took off in P-40 ship. Is unarmed and without radio communication. Request you locate and signal him to return to base immediately. Go ahead.
Okay.
Jim looks all around to see if he can see Woody's plane, then steers his plane sideways. Woody's flying alone in the clouds. Suddenly, he spots the three Japanese planes up ahead. With a smile, he directs his plane towards them. One of the rear gunners has got him in his sights. Woody speeds towards the planes.
Get your checkbook out, General.
He presses the button to fire his guns, but nothing happens. He tries again frantically. Then the Japanese rear gunner starts to fire at him. As Woody dives down to avoid the machine gun fire, a few bullets catch his tail, and he starts to spiral downwards, out of control. He pulls back hard on the stick, but the plane doesn't respond, and the ground comes hurtling up towards him. Jim spots Woody's plane spiraling out of control and quickly heads in his direction. His team of men follow. Meanwhile, Woody's still struggling with his controls. His plane spins over and over. Everyone's watching with bated breath on the ground. Woody pulls back hard on the stick one last time, and this time the plane responds. His nose tilts upwards, and he brings the plane down on its belly, sending it skidding through some trees. Everyone races towards him. Jim's plane comes into land, and men climb into a truck and set off for the crash site. As Jim's plane comes to a standstill, he jumps out of the cockpit and runs to hitch a ride on a passing truck heading for the crash site. Woody's plane lies wrecked amidst some trees. They hurry over to him.
Woody, are you all right?
Oh, I'm all right.
Panic over. Jim climbs down from the wreckage. Woody eases himself out of the cockpit and hops down from the plane.
Well, I walked away from that one.
Hey, whose side are you on?
Report to my office immediately.
Okay, Pappy.
A few more landings like that and he'll be a Japanese ace.
What do you think you are, with some broken down flying circus?
Oh, it would have been a cinch. I was riding the murder spot right above those Japolas. If I had ammunition, I'd have blown them clear out of China.
And you washed out a good ship.
Hey, you talk like that crate is more important than me.
I can't afford to lose either planes or pilots.
Look, Pappy, it's like I told you down at the barracks. All I get out of this is the dough, so you can't blame me for trying. And a skeet match, the guy who knocks down our most pigeons wins the cup.
I can't have grandstanders trying to hog the whole show. Results here are based on cooperation and understanding. Discipline in the air is strict because that's the only way an outfit like this can operate. Well, wait, Hap.
All right. I'll admit I was wrong. I made a mistake.
Okay. This kind of warfare, a fellow likes to feel he's flying with somebody he can trust.
What do I care what they're like? It's every man for himself, isn't it?
Not these days. Wait till you look back over your shoulder and see a Jap sitting on your tail. In a ship that you can't outmaneuver. Then you'll know what I'm talking about.
Okay, Pappy. From now on, I'll study my lessons and practice the piano every day. There won't be any more trouble. I'll be a modest, respectful soldier if he kills me. I swear.
Okay, Willie.
You got a cigarette?
Jim hands him a pack.
Keep him.
Thanks.
To Hap.
You got a match?
Hap strikes a match and lights his cigarette for him. With a grin, Woody leaves.
Fred's gonna have a little trouble with that ball of fire, Skipper.
Oh, Woody's all right. Gets a little off beam once in a while. But he's gonna develop into the best flyer in the squadron. That's what counts. See how he went after those three Japs? That took nerve.
Yeah. He's got nerve, all right.
Got a cigarette?
Hap gives him one, then hands him the matches.
These are the planes you'll be tangling with. Know them so you can identify them. Many of these planes carry detachable auxiliary gas tanks, which give them great range. These tanks are dropped when they reach the objective, so they don't lessen the plane's fighting efficiency. The Kawanishi 96 can carry about a half a ton of bombs as well as scout. But the most modern fighter, and the toughest one to crack, is the Nakajima. It isn't fast, but it's light and maneuverable. If you find yourself in trouble and have to bail out, there's one important thing to remember. Do a close-shoot fall. Drop as far as possible outside the combat area before pulling the cord. That's to prevent our little brown friends from following you down and machine-gunning you while you're hanging helplessly in the air. It's a quaint little habit of theirs. And watch for the man who's hit the silk. Protect him whenever possible.
You know what I'm not going to do, Pappy? I'm not going to ask you what to do if that chute doesn't open. Because you'll say...
Take it back to the factory.
Oh, yeah.
No hits, no runs, no errors. There must be something I'm doing wrong.
Yesterday, I unloaded a whole case of shells before I seen I was firing at my own shadow in a cloud.
You keep shooting at those clouds, the angel's gonna get sore at you, boy.
13 for our team and nobody bench. Nice work, boys.
13.
You ain't superstitious, are you? You are. The next time I go up, I'll make it 14.
Yeah, I'll bet.
I can take that scoreboard down to the bank and cash it in right now. 2,000 smackers and a day's only Thursday. Any of you hang a pilot stop that yet?
You're a fellow who tied it once. Only he didn't live to spend it.
It's too bad he waited. I have a feeling if I hit my stride, you guys can take a vacation. At my expense, of course.
How does it feel to be a one-man team?
I don't get it.
You're not the first ball carrier that didn't appreciate its interference.
Give me that in straight English.
Well, twice I've been on the tail of the Nakajima when you've cut in for the kill. And the credit.
Hold it, Blackie.
Wait a minute. Let him talk.
There's only one guy you think about up there. Woody Jason.
Listen, Sorehead. Every time I ever cut in on you, I probably saved your life. If I were you, I'd be the last guy to talk about cutting in. I saw the tunnel that my pal left to Matson dug in the Cleveland Air Races.
Look, you figured his turn wrong. Everybody saw what happened.
Oh, sure. It was all cleared up in the investigation, wasn't it? But they forgot to smell your breath.
Blackie leaps at him. But Woody pushes him off, then punches him. Hap gets between them.
Seven! Attention, A flight! Elements A, B, and C. Enemy aircraft in force over Mekong Bridge.
Tails up! Get moving, you two guys.
I'm not through with you yet.
Okay, Tom, you know where I live.
A fleet of Japanese planes is in the sky. The Japanese bomb aimer looks through his bomb sight and positions his crosshairs over a town below. He pulls the trigger, releasing a wave of bombs. Smoke rises up from the target. The the Flying Tigers home in on the Japanese fighter planes. One Japanese pilot sends his plane into a dive. He spins round, then starts to fire his machine guns. Woody fires back, hitting the pilot in the face. His plane bursts into flames and plummets to the ground in a stream of thick black smoke. Now Blackie's got his sights on the Japanese plane. He fires his gun, but another Japanese plane's on his tail. It skims over the top of him, its bullets piercing the front of his plane. Thick black smoke streams out. The cockpit starts to fill with smoke, and Blackie struggles to control the craft. He slides open the roof and clambers out onto the wing. As he rolls off into the sky, Woody spots him from his plane. Blackie's chute opens, and he starts to drift down to Earth. He looks up and spots a plane heading straight for him. Grim-faced, the Japanese fighter pilot makes a beeline for him, firing his guns as he gets closer. Blackie slumps into his harness. A letter from Blackie to his wife. It says, "When this is all over, Werner, we can go back and look the whole world in the eye, knowing we've done a good job. I love you, Werner. Blackie." Woody's reading the letter in the barracks. As the other men come in, he hides it. Hap and the others trail in, looking subdued.
"Hear about Jason? He got another nippo today."
"Yeah. It's too bad they don't pay off on dead pilots."
"Hey, wait a minute, fellas. You can't pin this mistake on me. Blackie hadn't opened his parachute so soon, it wouldn't have happened."
"Maybe if you'd have followed Blackie down, it wouldn't have happened either. You were nearest to him and you're in the clear. What happened?"
"A Mitzi got in my way."
"I guess it's easier to see $500 than a pal of yours in trouble."
Looking hurt, Woody walks out.
"Hey, you got five planes now. That makes you an ace."
"Ace? How do you spell it?"
"Hey, Mike, that ship gassed?"
"Yeah, him foot to top."
"Okay. Oh, Jim, you mind if I use that ship?"
"Where are you going?"
"Up for some fresh air. It's a little heavy in the barracks."
"Go ahead."
"Thanks."
"Woody, I gotta know the truth about one thing. Could you have prevented Blackie Bale's death?"
"No, Jim. I saw him fall, but I didn't see him open his chute. I was sure he'd wait until he was safe. If I thought he was in danger, I'd have looked after him."
"That's good enough for me."
"Thanks, Pappy."
Woody climbs into his plane, and Jim stands back as he starts up the engine and sets off across the grass. Jim stands watching him with a thoughtful look on his face.
"I never saw anything like the way you went after those ships." "Yeah, it was something, all right. First one and then another and then..."
Woody's with Blackie's wife.
"None of us want to go, Mrs. Bales. We'd all like to live to be 108. But few of us get a chance to go out in a blaze of glory like Blackie did."
He wasn't afraid."
"Oh, Blackie wasn't afraid of anything. You know, we got a pretty tough bunch of guys up there. Well, they've got to be for what they're up against. But when it came to real fighting spirit, none of them could touch Blackie."
Did they like him?"
"Oh, they were crazy about him. He was great to be around. Always making cracks and keeping people's spirits up."
"I'm glad."
"I suppose you'll be going back to the States. Well, this belonged to Blackie."
money.
So much?
Oh, sure. You knocked a couple down a week before.
He never wrote me.
Well, that shows you what kind of a guy he was. He wouldn't even tell his wife how well he was doing. Well, I gotta be going. Goodbye. And good luck to you.
Woody heads out. Outside the door, he pauses, listening with a frown. He walks off. In a small town, locals are going about their daily business, hoeing the earth and pushing barrows. A medical vehicle comes through a small stone archway and pulls up outside a building. Brooke heads inside and goes over to a woman sitting at a desk.
Good afternoon, nurse.
Good afternoon, Madame Montier. Are those our children laughing?
Yes. It's that wonderful young man you sent to us.
I sent you?
You were a saint to think of it. He's the first ray of sunlight these children have known in months.
I think I'll take a look at Mr. Sunbeam.
She heads outside, where Woody's standing in front of a crowd of children.
Hurry, hurry, hurry! You are just about to witness that great, that colossal, that stupendous mystery known as the disappearing half a dollar. Or...
He spots Brooke.
Or now you see it, and now you don't. Now I need a young lady to assist me. Will any young lady step up, please? Some young lady, any young lady? You, come on.
A girl shakes her head.
Oh, come on! Come on. Oh, come on. That's the girl.
Smiling shyly, she gets up.
This will amaze you before your very eyes. In my hand here, I have a brand new half a dollar. It's brand new. I made it myself this morning. You can still smell the mint on it. I will make it disappear into my elbow. Watch very closely. Here it goes. Don't take your eyes off of my hand. Well, now watch me very closely. Now watch it very closely. What happens? See? Whoop! It slipped. Now watch it closely. You see? Watch my hand. Everybody watches very closely. Here it goes. One, two, three. Hocus pocus, bow-legged locus. And what happens? It's gone. What do you know about that? How do you like that, huh? I wonder where it is now. I wonder where it could be. I think I know. Yes, I do. I see it. Here it is. Right behind your ear. Well, what do you know about that? How do you like that? Isn't that wonderful, chick? Yes. Well, thank you very much, miss. And now... Excuse me.
He goes over to Brooke.
Don't tell them, but that's the only trick I know.
Joy and hello.
You see, my public won't let me go.
If you could persuade your public to follow you inside, I might be able to change some of their bandages.
Absolutely. Hurry, hurry, hurry. Right this way to see the beautiful nurse perform the greatest trick in all the world. She is lovely, she is beautiful. And she's mad at me.
Hearing the sound of bombs, the children quickly get up and run for cover. Woody picks up a little girl lying on a bed, while Brooke takes the child lying next to her. All the children run inside. Those immobile in their beds are helped out by medical staff. All are carried or helped over to the far end of the room, where they all huddle together. As the building reverberates from the explosions, dust falls from the ceiling, and lamps start to shake. The children all gather on the bottom bunks of bunk beds and stare fearfully upwards at the ceiling. Everyone waits with bated breath to see where the next bomb will land. Brooke and Woody are standing together. The children continue to gaze upwards in fear, and a lamp swings from side to side in front of Brooke and Woody as they wait anxiously.
Well, I guess they're going away.
I hope so. Have the children get ready. I'll change their bandages now.
The children all start to file out.
Careful, she's slipping.
They're pretty tough to hold when they're this young.
Some of them never get any older.
Woody looks at the little girl on his lap, who's having her bandage changed. Then he glances round at all the children on their beds.
Why did you dig up all these kids?
Most of them were dug up, as you put it, after the bombings.
Are they all orphans?
The little girl you're holding walked almost 1,000 miles across China to get here. She lived on roots or whatever else she could find to eat.
Well, how did she find this place?
I don't know. Some instinct brings them here. Or perhaps one child tells another. But always after a bombing, here they are. Starved, patient, silent.
I had no idea.
Very few people do.
Well, there you are, darling.
A little girl comes over holding a basket of biscuits, which she holds up shyly.
What's she selling?
She's brought you these rice cakes as a tribute.
Tribute for what? That corny trick with a half a dollar?
No, for your courage and loyalty as a member of the Flying Tigers.
Oh. What else did she say?
We are humbly grateful and beg you to accept these useless rice cakes, even though they are not worthy of so honorable and so brave a warrior.
Oh, yeah, well, tell her okay and thanks, and I'll keep them flying.
Thank you. Kuri wa doce.
A nurse helps the little girl away.
Well, why don't you have dinner with me tonight, and we can have these for dessert?
Sorry.
No?
I'm having dinner with Jim.
Hey, you're good!
Night time, and an elderly local man is falling asleep by a gramophone. Jim and Brooke are sitting in a near-empty restaurant.
You want I should come back again, or you want to order now?
Well, what's good tonight?
We have special Mexican dishes. Eggs foo young, candy duck, old chop suey.
Have you any roast beef you can cut with a fork?
You surely have oysters you can cut with a knife.
No floor show?
No, sir. No floor show. But music. Very nice.
Can't you turn that record over? Is it only got one side?
Him turn over. No music. But him turn over.
Well, never mind. We're getting so we like it.
Thank you.
Look, Jim, why don't you surprise us? Bring us something new, like chow mein.
Very nice. Very good chow mein. American dishes.
Oh, I'm sorry, Brooke.
Sorry? What are you talking about?
Well, you know all this. If we were back in the States, we'd be having dinner at some good restaurant. Dancing once or twice. Might even go off to a show.
But what's the matter with this? The food here is excellent, and as for the music, there's a wonderful orchestra on that record. I'm a little hoarse by now, but we can still dance. Ask me and see.
Jim looks over at the man sitting fast asleep by the gramophone. Jim clicks his fingers, and the man wakes up and puts the needle at the beginning of the record.
Miss Elliot, may I have this dance?
I've promised it to that dashing lieutenant in the Horse Marines. But I don't think he'll mind.
Brooke gets up, and they start to dance around the empty restaurant. The gramophone man smiles, rests his head on his hand, and closes his eyes again. Jim and Brooke smile tenderly at each other as they dance. Hap comes into the restaurant. When he sees the two of them, he smiles and goes to lean on the bar and watch them. Jim spots him, stops dancing, and comes over.
What's wrong?
This came for you. It's in code, so I thought it might be important.
I hate to break in on you two.
That's all right, Hep.
I'll have to get back to the field and decode this.
Of course.
Sorry, Brooke. Guess we can never really plan anything.
Ah, it's lady. Nice dish, very nice.
Sorry, Jen. We gotta run along.
What I do with this?
You eat it.
Me eat this? No, sir. No, sir.
I dragged you all out of bed and every place else because this arrived.
I haven't had any mail for months.
I didn't know that any of your friends could write.
Well, here it is. Commencing the 1st, that's tomorrow, your squadron assumes continuous night reconnaissance and alternating patrols. Signed R.T. Lindsay and so forth. In simple language, that means we start a night patrol as well as day.
Yeah, but Jim, we're not set up for night flying. We have no beacon and no landing lights.
We'll use the headlights on the trucks.
How?
We have 6 vehicles. We'll line 3 up on each side of the runway.
It's all right for takeoffs, but what about landings?
Those lights can be seen from 5,000 feet up on a clear night.
Fine. Suppose there's a ground fog. What happens then?
Well, Woody, all you have to do is use your fog knife.
Fog knife? What's that?
Don't tell me Jason hasn't got one of those.
Every ace has one. Well, sure. When you're caught in a heavy fog, all you do is cut a hole in it with your fog knife and drop down like in an elevator.
You must have fallen through one of those holes on your head.
Easy, easy. Let's save that for the annual barbecue. Now pay attention. No pilots must leave the post. All leaves are automatically canceled. Starting tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock, every man on the field must report to Dr. Tsing for a physical checkup. That's all. Scatter and get some sleep.
The men all get up to leave.
Woody?
Yeah?
Got a minute?
Sure. What are you going to do, stand me in the corner?
No. I'll be leading flight A, and Hap here will be leading flight B. I want you to take over Hap's old position. Number 2 in back of me on my flight.
Okay, Pappy. Don't worry about a thing. Good night.
Good night, Skipper.
Good night, Hap.
Some of you guys don't seem to understand the reasons for these special tests.
Sure we do. It's to find out if we need a seeing eye dog.
Okay, it's funny now. But the first time you're on a night flight and a string of tracers come hissing out at you from the dark, you'll be darn glad that we rechecked your eyesight and reflexes.
Sure, Hap, we know that.
Night patrol calls for peak efficiency and perfect physical fitness.
Right.
Where did you dig that up?
Well, I've been studying. Oh, don't, Doc, that's cold. I'm ticklish.
There don't seem to be nothing wrong with his reflexes.
Alabama giggles as the doctor listens to his chest through a stethoscope.
Alignment blocks, please.
Alabama gets down from his stool and goes to sit in front of a contraption containing 2 narrow vertical blocks, each on a pulley. Alabama has to hold 2 strings attached to each of the blocks and, looking through a hole, pull the strings until the blocks are exactly equal.
Cop cock, Luff.
Is everything all right?
All these reports go to Squadron Leader Gordon. The final decision rests with him.
Boy, I sure would hate to miss out on night patrol. I hear those Japos glow in the dark like bugs. good morning, gentlemen. Having your oil changed?
Well, is my eyesight failing me, or is it that beautiful hunk of man?
Oh, you keep that up, fella, and someday they'll put you on the radio.
Come on, fellas. Let's go down to the gasoline dump and get a breath of fresh air.
The men trail out.
You asked for that, Jason.
Okay. I'm not beefing, am I? Where's the gadget you wanted me to come back for, Doctor?
Yes, over here, please. When I examined Mr. Jason this morning, this had not arrived yet. I asked him to come back with the others.
Woody stands with his back to the contraption and reaches between his legs to line the blocks up.
Is that what you wanted?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
You know, Jason, people who fly upside down get a pretty twisted picture of what's going on all around them.
Yeah, thanks, Hap. Thanks a lot. You want enough to travel, Alabama?
Huh?
Oh, yeah.
All right, Mr. Hap.
Hap unbuttons his shirt, and the doctor listens to his chest.
Think I'll fall apart, Doc?
You should outlive Confucius.
That's good enough for me.
Jim's in his office, reading a letter. He puts it down as Hap comes in.
You want to see me, Skipper?
Sit down, Hap. I made a change. Tex Norton will lead Flight B instead of you.
Well, that's okay, Jim. I'd rather be up there in my old spot anyway, protecting your tail feathers.
Oh, it isn't that, Hap. I gotta hand you one on the chin. But I'd rather it came from me than from somebody else.
Go ahead, Jim.
You're through flying.
Hap looked shocked.
The doc said I'd live to be 100.
If you stay on the ground.
Oh. I see.
Hap smiles.
Okay. Is there anything else?
No. Wait a minute. I can't send a man up that doesn't know whether he's flying upside down or not. Take a look at that physical. Your depth perception's a mile off. I know you've been gunning them since they were fox kites with broomsticks for rudders. But you gotta believe me, I'm doing this for you. You've been close winging in formations, overshooting your landings.
You don't have to say anymore. I was kind of figuring on going back to the States anyway. Maybe get me a chicken ranch or something. I hear there's a lot of dough and eggs.
Eggs? What are you trying to kid? You haven't been saving any money. Been giving it away as fast as you make it. Look, Hap, I need you here.
What could I do now?
Taking care of these crates on the ground is just as important as flying them upstairs. I gotta have a man I can trust on the ground. I wish you'd take that job, Hap.
You're not doing this to...
No. I really need you.
Well, ground kind of hurts my arches. But, well, I'll think about it.
Thanks, Hap.
I didn't swing at that one. Come on. Okay, I never could bat without my spike shoes anyway.
Come on,
let it go.
Woody comes outside to find the men playing baseball. He leans against the wall, smiling as he watches them.
Woody?
Hello.
How are things going?
You better not be seen talking to me. I'm Poison Ivy. Everything I touch breaks out into a rash.
I just got a letter from Mrs. Bales.
What's she writing you about?
Oh, I sent her Blackie's things. She wrote to thank me.
Oh.
She said to be sure and give you her regards.
Well,
You are a difficult man to get to know, aren't you?
Why don't you have dinner with me and I can get to know me better?
You don't take no for an answer, do you?
Why should I when it's just as easy to say yes? Isn't it?
Yes.
Well, swell. I'll meet you tonight at the orphanage at 8 o'clock. Right?
Okay. See you later.
Wait a minute. Don't say anything about, to anybody about Mrs. Bales, will you? I don't want to spoil my record.
All right.
Now be on time! Hey, Bammer!
Those guys only get 7 lucky hits off of me in 3 innings.
Yes, well, I'm going off the reservation tonight. I got a date.
What about night patrol? You're an A flight.
Oh, don't worry about it. I'll be back in time. But if anyone asks any questions about me, you cover me.
I'm getting that old feeling.
All right, fellas, synchronize your watches at 10:55. It's now 10:54 and 57, 58, 59. Mark it. Text, B flight must relieve us at exactly 11:55.
Right.
Otherwise, we might mistake you for the enemy. Well, that's about it. Take off in 4 minutes. I thought Jason was here.
Well, I thought I saw him getting dressed just a few minutes ago, sir.
Well, get him on the field.
Yes, sir.
Warm him up.
To Hap.
Did you see Woody?
No.
Oh, gee, I just stalled the skipper. He'll wring my neck, too, if he finds out Woody left the field.
Against orders?
Yeah. Oh, but he said he'd be right back.
Well, he's Jim's number 2, man. He better be back.
Woody and Brooke are in a car hurtling down the darkened country roads. They splash through a puddle. back at the airfield.
Tell Pilot Jason takeoff is in 2 minutes.
Yes, sir.
All right, warm it up, Mike.
Okie dokie.
Waiting for Mr. Jason, please.
Yeah, yeah. Tell him he'll be right there.
Yes, sir.
I still don't think this is right.
You keep your mouth shut, do you hear?
But if anybody's going to take Woody's fight, it ought to be me.
Are you crazy?
I've been trying number two for Jim for over a year. I know every one of his quirks, every one of his moves. We're a team, don't you understand?
Yeah, I know, but...
It's like he was the ball carrier and I was his interference.
Yeah, sure. But I still don't like it. You're supposed to stay on the ground.
Not so long as Jim is in the air.
Hap pulls down his goggles and runs over to his plane. Jim watches from his cockpit, then pulls down his own goggles. Hap climbs into the cockpit and returns Jim's thumbs up. Jim starts up his plane and sets off across the grass. Behind him, the line of planes rev up their propellers and start to move off after him. One by one, the planes set off down the runway. Alabama watches anxiously from the ground. As the last of the planes heads off, Woody's car hurtles into the airfield. Woody jumps out.
Who, me and Pabby? No. I wonder who's flying number two.
Where have you been?
I'm late, so what?
So Hap took your flight, that's what.
All right, I'd do as much for him, wouldn't I?
But Hap was grounded.
Yeah.
They watch the planes take off into the darkness. The Flying Tigers head off in formation across the sky. Hap smiles to himself. Jim picks up his radio.
Hey, leader to A2, go ahead.
Hap doesn't know what to do.
What's the matter, Jason? You going to sleep?
Hap picks up the radio.
A2 to A-leader. What do you want? Go ahead. Hap! Where's Jason? What are you doing here? Go on back.
Sorry, Jim. Remember me? I'm the little man who's always there. But besides, it's too late.
He points to a fleet of Japanese fighters.
A-leader to flight A. Nakajima fighters on port quarter. Combat formation.
The Tigers get into formation and head towards the fleet of Japanese planes. Jim, Hap, and another plane dive towards them. A Japanese pilot spots them, and as they begin to fire, he retaliates. Jim grits his teeth, but a fighter plane behind him starts to fire at him. He quickly pulls out of his dive and veers off. Hap gets on the radio.
Don't worry, Jim. I'm climbing his back porch now.
Hap rubs his eyes. He squints and blinks as he tries to focus his aim on the Japanese plane on Jim's tail. He fires, killing the pilot.
Pull out, Hap! Pull out!
Hap crashes into the fighter plane, and the two explode in a ball of flames. Jim watches in horror as Hap's plane plummets to Earth. He turns away, looking distraught. Back at the airfield, Woody and Brooke are waiting by the car. As Woody lights a cigarette, they spot the Tigers coming back. Two lines of vehicles switch on their headlights to light up a landing strip. Brooke and Woody's heads move from side to side in unison as they watch each plane come into land, but as they count them down, one's missing. Woody scours the skies anxiously, then looks at Brooke. The planes start to rumble down the landing strip. Jim turns off his engine, then sadly starts to unstrap himself out of his harness and take off his goggles. He pauses for a moment, then climbs out of his cockpit. He climbs out onto the wing, then jumps down to the ground. Brooke and Woody are waiting. As they walk over to him, he gets his cigarettes out of his pocket and puts one in his mouth. He lights it, then looks at them both.
I hope you two had a good time, 'cause Hap paid the check.
He walks off. Woody and Brooke watch him, looking shell-shocked. He heads inside, and without a word, walks straight past his clerk, who's typing at his desk, and goes into his office, shutting the door. He takes off his flying hat and goggles and sits down. Woody comes in and shuts the door behind him. Jim stares at him coldly.
Jim.
There's an army truck out of here day after tomorrow for Lycio. Be on it.
Don't say that, Jim.
Till then, you're confined to your quarters.
But I'm still a good flyer, Jim. I'll knock down 10 of those rats for the one of our boys.
It's out of my hands now. None of these men will ever fly with you again. And they have to fly.
Woody gives him a long look, then strides out. The date on Jim's calendar says Sunday the 7th of December, 1941.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. The United States was at peace with that nation, and at the solicitation of Japan, was still in conversation with its government and its emperor, looking toward the maintenance of peace in the Pacific. I believe that I interpret the will of the Congress and of the people when I assert that we will not only defend ourselves to the uttermost, but will make it very certain that this form of treachery shall never again endanger us.
Woody listens to the radio with a grim face. Brooke is listening with the other nurses.
There is no blinking at the fact that our people, our territory, and our interests are in grave danger. With confidence in our armed forces, with the unbounding determination of our people, I ask that the Congress declare that since the unprovoked and dastardly attack by Japan on Sunday, December 7th, 1941, a state of war has existed between the United States and the Japanese Empire.
As the broadcast finishes, Jim walks off. Brooke and the nurses get back to work, and in the barracks, the men start to move about again. But Woody remains looking thoughtful. A plane slows down as it taxis across the airfield. Jim steps back out of the way of a wing as the plane comes to a stop. He runs over to open the door, and an officer steps out.
How are you, Jim?
Good, Colonel, and you?
As the two men walk back to Jim's office, men around the airfield salute them.
Jim, I don't have to tell you what our entrance into the war means to the volunteer group in China. Our responsibility is grave. You and your men will have to take greater risks now than ever before.
I think they all know it, sir. This hits them where they live. I don't think any of them will let you down.
I'm sure they won't. Come here. Intelligence reports that the Japanese are starting a new drive from this point. But to camouflage that move, they're starting a fake attack from this point, under cover of which they intend to bring up supplies and munitions from here. Now, we must destroy this bridge and delay the supply trains which pass over it.
I see.
That's the only way we can give General Chiang Kai-shek sufficient time to establish his defenses.
I know that area. It's a nest of anti-aircraft and Nakajima squadrons. Thank you. They can send up an ACAC umbrella high enough to make any attack ineffective.
I warned you what we'd be up against.
But there's a way to do it, I think.
Yeah?
A bomber squadron, even with our protection, wouldn't stand a chance. But a single ship might get through.
How?
By flying through the canyons instead of over them. Taking off at dawn and hugging the sides of the hills away from the sun, a pilot might bring his ship through the pass and directly over the bridge.
Sounds like hedge-hopping to suicide.
Maybe.
But if you think it can be done, I'll order a bomber ferried here right away.
I think we can use that transport.
What?
Well, they've been flying over enemy territory for 5 years. They get potted at, of course. But they don't attract as much attention as a military ship.
Well, what about bombs? It's got no bomb rack, no bomb release, nothing.
We can figure that out. There's 8 or 9 cans in our munition dump. Marked Nitro, USA. I think I can find a messenger boy to deliver him.
The job of a volunteer, of course.
Of course.
Now, the plane's being loaded with cans of nitroglycerine. A can's passed into the plane, where a mechanic very carefully carries it over to Jim. He loads it, along with the other cans, into a specially made wooden frame, sliding it in with great care.
Doggone it, you ought to be tarred and feathered, Woody. Getting yourself slung out of this outfit just when things are getting exciting.
What's going on out there?
Huh?
You heard me. What's happening?
Reardon joins him at the window.
That's the skipper's idea. He's going to go over and fix breakfast for the Jappies. Going to serve them soup.
Who's going with him?
Nobody. If you ask me, it's a one-way trip.
Woody looks thoughtfully out of the window.
These reports must go out daily to keep Colonel Enzi informed on our status.
Yes, sir.
Ship Norton to ground operations. Selby and Evans to night patrol flight A. Miller ought to be about ready now to start in again with Reardon as a team.
Right.
It's about all, except you'll have to keep after Kunming for gas, oil, and supplies, and Tonggu for replacements. Take good care of the store, Mac.
I will, sir. Good luck, sir.
Thank you, Mac. Come in. Yes?
I have Dr. Singh's report on Bart.
How is he?
You can have him back in a week.
Colonel Lindsay's waiting outside, Jim.
Right.
Jim! Good luck.
Thanks.
Brooke watches him leave. The propellers on the passenger plane whir into life as Jim and the Colonel stride across the grass towards it. The men all stand watching Jim, anxiously. The two men march up to the plane, and Jim pulls open the door in the back.
I haven't wanted to question you, Jim, but I thought you were going to call for volunteers.
It only takes one, doesn't it?
Jing Hao.
Thank you, Colonel.
Jim climbs into the belly of the plane, and it immediately sets off.
Mike! Rev it down! Mike, cut those motors! What do you think you're doing? Cut those motors!
Woody's at the wheel. The plane takes off into the sky. Jim sits beside him.
Get into your parachute.
Woody slides his arms into his harness.
I'd land and throw you out of here if I could take a chance on that cargo back there. Bail out at 1500.
You can't handle this crate all by yourself. It's a job for the two of us. Somebody's got to handle this stick while the other guy drops his stuff. You know that as well as I do.
Not the way I got it rigged.
Look, Jim, I know I've been a lot of trouble to you since we first got to be friends. You're the only guy I know who's stuck by me.
You're trying to alibi the way you've been living, we'll run out of gas.
All right, maybe I did start out just to have a bunch of land.
Listen, Woody, anybody who looks ahead in this racket's crazy. I don't blame you for grabbing what you can today.
You don't mean that. If you did, you'd have dropped me long ago.
Hit the silk.
Look, Jim, I had to talk to you. I don't know where I'm going from here. When I'll see you again. It's like Brooks said. I don't know anything about anything. Why are we here? Why are we fighting? And all that sort of stuff. And she tried to straighten me out, too. Although half the time she was talking about you and roast beef and San Francisco and all those crazy things. See what I mean?
1500.
Are we going to say goodbye like this?
Bail out!
Okay. I got it coming to me. There's one thing you got to get straight on. A whole lot of us just don't grow up. We stay kids. The most important thing to a kid is the street he lives on. It's his life. It's his whole world. That was me when I first joined up with you. Hong Kong, Shanghai, Chongqing. They didn't mean anything to me. Just a lot of names in a geography book. Not towns where millions of people were being maimed and killed by bombs. Call them Texas, Maine, or Michigan. That would have been different. They were my street. That's why I acted the way I did. Not because I was a heel, but because I was still a kid. It cost another man's life to make a man out of me. And if you don't think that will stay on my mind as long as I live, then you don't know any more about me than I think you did in the first place. Well, that's all, and happy landing.
Sit down, Woody. Check the course.
Okay, Pappy.
The two men smile to themselves. The plane cruises over some rocks and down into a canyon.
Well, here we go into the tunnel of love.
The plane continues on its way, keeping close to the cliffs. Jim turns to check something on the floor.
Pull her up!
Woody quickly pulls them out of danger.
You know, I used to drive a roller coaster.
Delivering nitro?
Yes.
Were you killed?
Uh-huh. Take over, I want to get into this chute.
Right.
As Woody takes over the controls, Jim slips his arms into the harness of his chute. A train passes over an iron bridge below.
Looks like the supply trains are moving.
But the bridge ain't. You may serve the soup course now, Pappy.
On the ground below, Japanese soldiers are aiming their anti-aircraft guns. They start firing at the plane, many of the shots only missing it by a narrow margin.
Get her closer.
If I get any closer to that bridge, we'll have to pay a toll charge.
More shots explode in the air around the plane.
Let her go!
Not yet!
As they sweep in low over the bridge, Jim pulls to release the cans of nitroglycerine, which fall onto the far end of the bridge, causing the whole structure to collapse to the ground in a cloud of smoke and rubble.
Give the gentleman a cigar!
If they want to cross that river, they'll have to swim it.
Anti-aircraft fire rains down around them. A couple of shots pierce the plane. Woody sees he's been hit.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm all right.
This crate's got enough lead in its belly to sink a battleship.
Don't look now, but our tail feathers are on fire.
Huh?
This is it, Pappy. Let's take a powder.
Six cans of nitro aboard and that train's still running.
Yeah, but this is one plane we're going to have to miss. Come on, let's go.
Right. Throw it on automatic.
Woody adjusts the controls, then he follows Jim back through the belly of the plane. Jim heads for the door and opens it.
Come on, hit the cell, Woody!
Here we go!
Jim falls from the plane. Jim's chute opens, and as he looks round for Woody, he spots blood on the sleeve of his jacket. He looks up to see the plane flying past overhead, its tail on fire. Inside the plane, Woody struggles his way back to the cockpit. He sits back down at the wheel and takes the controls again. As the plane skims over the top of a train, Japanese soldiers on board aim their anti-aircraft guns at him. With a strange smile on his face, Woody mouths something, then heads straight for the train. As bullets pierce his windscreen, he crashes right into the side of the train, exploding in a ball of flames. Jim watches sadly from the sky.
Favor, will you, Pappy? Give my leather jacket to Reardon. He's a cold character. Divide my address book evenly between the boys in the barracks. And give my silk scarf to the next hedge hopper that thinks this is an easy racket. Woody. Come in.
You sent for me, sir?
Yes, Barrett. This is your first time up. Don't try to win this war all by yourself. Stick close to element formation, and if you find yourself in trouble, pour on the coal and head for home.
Yes, sir.
Just a minute.
Woody's silk scarf.
This is for you.
Gee, thanks.
Take good care of it. Belong to a pretty good flyer.
Sure.
Flight A, reconnaissance patrol, 2 minutes.
How about having dinner with me? I hear Jim has a new record.
Swell.
Brooke hurries to the window as Jim races outside to his plane with the other men. The propellers whir into action, and the locals wave from a short distance away. Jim climbs into his cockpit and gives the thumbs up. As his plane rumbles off down the airstrip, Brooke gazes out of the window. In the sky above her, the flying tigers set off in formation. The end.